Blog Talk Radio. Hello, everyone. Hello, radiant beings. Take a nice deep breath in. That piece of music was called Breathe. And I do feel like breathing in deeply today, breathing in the wonder that is today. So hello, everyone that I see already in the chat room and all that are on the phone lines. Welcome to this wonderful morning, afternoon, evening, depending where you are listening from. I'm your host and co-pilot, Michelle Mache, dialed in, tuned in, and so looking forward to today's program as well. Those of you perhaps that are tuning in for the first time, Awakenings is a live internet radio program that broadcasts via CosmicDimensions.com as well as BlogTalkRadio.com and rebroadcasts about 15 different podcast stations around the globe, and then of course the archives are on iTunes and Blog Talk, so you can listen anytime you want and if you want to re-listen, which a lot of people do. So I welcome you all, those listening now, those listening later from the archives. It's great to connect with all of you. Here at Awakenings Radio, we highlight conscious living for conscious lives. Awakenings is the place for awakening conversations with artists, musicians, metaphysicians, spiritually minded people, and progressive thinkers in their own fields that are waking up and taking this awakened state into their everyday living and really doing something with it, you know, living differently. Here we connect with all people from all walks of life, really. The only thing is really that it's about waking up and living awake and bringing guests in that highlight this, that have been doing this, as well as listener participants. Very important aspect of Awakenings is those that are in the sacred space of empowerment, also known as the chat room, and all of you that participate via, well, first of all, your wonderful intentions and connecting, that synergy, but also those of you that take the time to email and with your guest suggestions or questions or feedback, that really keeps Awakenings very live and constantly evolving. Here at Awakenings, we really take the time to create a space where there's a timely relaying of essential information, insights, inspiration, and tools for transfer and inspiration and spiritual unfoldment. It's a reflecting point between science and spirituality, so in a sense looking at the unfoldment, the shift, the individual and collective awakenings that are happening and tracking and mapping the awakenings individually and collectively. So we can keep up on stuff to know what's coming up, right? Whether it's astrologically or how whatever the medium that is coming through, whether an actual medium or source or of that nature. And Awakenings is part of the converging flow. So out of the harmonic convergence, in the late 80s, when the harmonizing began, when the focus began to be to harmonize. So we went as far as we could with individualizing, individuation, and now we are recognizing our individuality, our individuated beingness of the all that is, but now harmonizing with others. And that's really what this huge transition is about. It's about moving from that we or that me to the we and co-creating from the we. So it's not about losing the me, but it's about connecting in to the awareness of the we energy and jumping off with that. If you have questions or comments, which those of you that join us, weekly, I love the comments and the questions and coming from Twitter, coming from Facebook, coming from some people are texting me, email, chat room, phone. Love it all. It is a wonderful outpicturing and living simultaneously and having a multidimensional or simultaneous reality. So we have people, you know, all time zones and all modes of communication. What does help me see a little better is if you are in the chat room and you type in caps, that helps me see your question or comment or your input or insight. I like to bring that in the mix. And then you can also absolutely call in either to listen or call in with your questions, insights, or comments. And that call-in number is 347-539-5122. And that's 347-539-5122. I want to share with you also that we have a bonus program, a little impromptu sneak program tonight with a fave of ours, Chad Lilly from Aware Talk Radio, is joining me tonight, as well as Kirsten Mitchell, who is a mythologist, writer, and media analyst. And she weaves the thread between mythology, technology, and spirituality. Ooh, right up my alley. And we also have part of this awakening panel is also Scott Brandon Hoffman, who's a visionary artist, philosopher, life coach, and comic. Okay, so he's pretty funny. He's pretty deep, pretty mystical, but pretty funny, and kind of a blending of all that. And then Chad from Inner Circle Publishing and Revolution Press. So we are going to be diving in later tonight on the archetypal energy and patterns that are affecting us at this time, because we're in a major shadow time. Many of you perhaps are noticing that there's a lot up. There's always a lot of archetypal energy, but we're just really in a path right now and in a phase where it's more intense, and part of that is because of the intensification of energy that we're in. We're in this gateway. We are still majorly operating from the lunar trinity. We've got right now, you know, Saturn is early degrees Libra, which is squaring the Pluto in Capricorn. Just to name a few, I believe Mars has just gone into Leo. As a country, we're a Cancerian country, so that's an opposition there. So there's just a lot of different layers, a lot of ways to look at what is happening. And I look at it as spirit, the God is, I am, the evolutionary process. Those of you that listen to me channeling the spiritual hierarchy, it's that energy template of the most expanded form that is about form, that's, I would say, closest to the I am, God is, I am center, or the infinite, or the God. But it's the aspect that deals with form or new forms coming into being. And a lot of these new forms are coming in new ways of being, new ways of relating, technology, innovations, inventions. So you're seeing this tearing down, but because of also the aspects of, you know, Uranus and Neptune, Uranus in Pisces, right, and Neptune in Aquarius, there's also this building up that's happening. There's also this co-creative energy. How many are feeling this? I know we're all feeling the kind of breaking down and things getting uncertain. But there's also, if you really tune in, especially in a mindfulness meditation, you also feel through the subtle energy this building. There's this building up that's happening. There's these new ideas, new forms, new creative ways of being that are coming in that kind of hark that the old way is too small. It's like the shoes are too small. So it's kind of happening, you know, simultaneously. Grand Elf is putting in the chat, I feel mostly cat energy. I feel a lot of cat, but I feel a lot of dog, a lot of energy from Sirius, a lot about service and loyalty, wolf energy connecting into your own inner guidance, not making sure to be enough of a lone wolf, but not overly a lone wolf that you're overly on your own, being connected to the pack, but also separating out. And you're going to see this with actually a lot of, whether they're religious organizations, spiritual organizations, governmental, banking organizations, you're going to see a real cleansing, especially in the next 8 to 10 months, a real cleansing of group and organization. And is there misuse of power, power over, under power? Again, we talked about the shadow, lots coming up with the shadow. One way to tap into myth or archetype, you know, tarot is definitely one way. The I Ching, you tap into that as well through archetypal energies. But also the archetypal energies that shape us come through meditation and in our dreams. So I think that, you know, it just always tickles me that how there's always a wonderful juxtaposition with the guests that come on Awakenings. You know, it's all the converging flow. I just show up. I really have nothing to do with this in so many ways. I'm just kind of holding the space, you know, and just see what's unfolding, because there's always seems to be a wonderful synchronicity as to what I'm experiencing or expressing personally, what I'm teaching to, you know, clients, students that I'm working with, what I'm learning, and then what the guest is also having to share, what their piece is. So that's one reason I just am so jazzed to connect with all of you all the time. It's, you know, you hear or see it reflected in the chat room that there's an amazing recognition of what's going on, and then people's own personal insight on this or questions, and then that sparks the whole creative play and the whole creative dialogue and contemplation of what is going on. And my contention is, not only are we moving more into the phase because we're more in a vibrational frequency, we're moving into the realization of being vibrational beings, but that what first comes before the thought forms, and then of course behavior and how we relate or our forms in the world, is this archetypal energy, the energy patterns that we are and that we relate to and that help us transition and help us change and help us transform, comes through as an archetypal energy. And definitely a way to tap into that archetypal energy is through the dreamscape and knowing how to tap into that dreamscape. What is that? What is the dreamscape? That's another way to look at it. So we have with us today Carrie Honey, who in fact is an actual dream therapist, works with dreams. She has a Way of Dreams dictionary, which will be released in October 2009. It's actually going to be an iPhone application, which I think is really amazing. And she's featured in Early Women Masters as a contributor to Women Authors of the Tao Te Ching. Her website, those of you that want to tap into that and kind of get another feel, you can contact her at, let's see here, thewayofthedreams.com if you want to kind of get a visual to speaking with Carrie. Hello, Carrie.
Hi, how are you? Are you?
Great, how are you doing?
Good, it's nice to be back. I appreciate
it. Oh, great to have you back. I know we touched on a lot of stuff last time, mm-hmm. and I know you and I talked and said, next time, we're diving in next time.
Right.
Let me, and make sure, is it Honey or Hone?
Yeah, it's Carrie Honey.
Carrie Honey. Okay, perfect. Carrie Honey. Okay. So, Carrie, one of the things, and I don't know if you heard earlier at the top of the program, I was saying how this is such a time of tapping into archetypal energy or mm-hmm. myth, and dreams can be a way to do this, to see, you know, what are we going through, or, you know, what kind of transition we're in, or we can use dreams to transform, our lives. Do you find now that the use of dreams and tapping into the meaning, is it becoming even more prevalent?
Yeah, I really think so. And I think when we spoke last time, I was telling you how much of my traffic to my site, www.wayofdreams.com, comes from all over the world. So it's not just something that's happening in California or Colorado or, you know, little places around the country. You know, it's I get the same sort of dreams submitted and questions from, you know, virtually everywhere. I mean, it amazes me. You know, I'll get stuff from the Middle East and little places in Africa and, you know, the Orient. And there's I think people are really recognizing that there is some valuable source of guidance that comes from dreams. And, you know, it's really cool that it stays with them enough that it propels them to go out and want to figure out what's a dream trying to teach them. You know, I think everybody recognizes that, wow, this dream's sticking with me, or it was really, you know, bizarre for a reason, and I want to get to the bottom of it. And then when they do, they're just blown away that some side of them actually, you know, has a sense of time and where they're going that transcends their own, you know, sense of self-awareness. So it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. So really, you're saying it is a form of self-awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can break it down in the ABCs of dream interpretation, because I think it's important to understand how to interpret a dream before you can really appreciate the relevance and the guidance that comes from dreams. And so is that okay? Do you want me to break it down?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, let's break it down.
Okay, so I use the ABCs so that you can remember.
Okay.
You know, number one, it's, you know, you have to approach the dream as a mirror. Everything is a reflection of you. And until you can kind of see dreams from that standpoint, you're not going to get that much information. If you see the dream as like the way you view daily life, where those are just events, they have nothing to do with me, or that was a banana and it doesn't really have anything to do with me, you're not going to get any information. But when you can stop and go, well, what can the symbol teach me about what I may not be recognizing about myself, then you start to go, wow, well, what side of me knows more about what I need to know, you know? So, and again, approach the dream as a mirror. Approach it as if it might teach you something that you may not know. And once you start doing that, you'll see that the symbols, the other people, the landscape, even the lighting, every single aspect of that dream is like a morsel of what's going on inside of you, where you need to go, what it may be that's blocking you. I think the last time we spoke, I was telling you about the three cycles of a dream. Dreams often present conflict, then the cause, and then the resolution in these different morphing landscapes. So, you know, so A is, you know, how you approach the dream, as everything is a symbol of you. And then B, before you analyze, write. You know, before you allow your waking head, the head that's actually working in some ways against what the dream is trying to achieve. And, you know, we're very static creatures. We want everything to be the same. We don't like change. So before we allow, you know, our head to start, you know, analyzing the dream, it's important to just sit with it. So before you do anything, you know, write down the symbols. Write as much as you can remember. And dreams are like an onion. You know, no matter how many layers you peel away, you're going to still have an onion. And I see this a lot in dreams, where somebody will submit, you know, all a paragraph of different changing landscapes, and the message is repeated like three or four times. So you don't have.
So it might be coming in a different way.
Exactly.
Is what you're saying.
Exactly. It'll come in one. The message is maybe that you need to like let go a little bit and not be so controlling. Then it will show up with a car theme, or then it will morph into a different landscape. But the same message, you know, will be there. So if you can just remember one symbol, and then treat that symbol as if it's going to teach you something, like a mirror about you, about your mind, about what you're doing, about what you need to change or where you need to go, you'll be amazed at how that one symbol, you know, it captures everything. I mean, Freud really wrote a lot about that the profound cleverness of the psyche and finding, like what you talked about, archetypes, this symbol, this one thing that encapsulates so many diverse dynamics within you. So that, you know, so that's really important. So you don't have to remember everything. And then, you know, I always say, how did the dream make you feel? Because the dream is trying to achieve some kind of release. I mean, most people will agree that we're dreaming about what we're not facing. And generally there's some transformation, or, you know, because life is about transformation and growth. And so, you know, how did the dream make you feel? And before you start to analyze it, you know, allow the feeling to take place, because it's achieving an opening. Does that make sense? You know,
mm-hmm,
it's trying
mm-hmm.
to... So,
and let's go back, because we have a lot of, not just in the chat, but, new listeners all the time,
mm-hmm.
and from all over the world. Mm-hmm. Go back to those three parts. I know we touched on in the program before, but the three parts of the dream, or three messages, or what they're trying to help you with. You said conflict. What was it,
like
conflict?
Cause, and then resolution. And so mm-hmm. what I see is that when somebody will they'll describe the whole dream, the first part will describe the conflict that's at hand. They're mm-hmm. driving down the road and a policeman's stopping them, or they're in their house and a tornado's coming, or, you know, and those symbols then speak to the conflict that might be taking place as we hold on to the past and the future's underway, that sort of thing. So the symbolism, you know, in that first part of the dream will speak to the conflict. And then generally people will describe, and then all of a sudden it changed into this. And that's the clue that you're going into the second part. And a lot of times that will have people from your childhood that you went to school with, or parents or siblings. And a lot of times that portion of the dream will speak to how the conflict was created. You know, you're on a school bus and your sister's, you know, doing whatever, you know, something in terms of conformity might be contributing to the reason that you're, you know, not letting go or holding on too tightly, you know, that sort of thing. And then the third part of the dream, which we'll get into, I'm sure, today, is the cryptic nature of dreams. I mean, the third part is always the most bizarre, because it happens at the end of the dream cycle. It's the one that we're stuck remembering. But because the symbol was so bizarre, I see it as like the Trojan horse of the psyche. It's an uncharged.
How so?
Exactly. It's like for example, somebody's seeing but their eyes are closed, or their teeth have fallen out, or a cow is chasing them, or, you know, something that's like so not logical and so bizarre. That is what I call the aha. It's the most relevant part of the dream, and when you break down that portion of the dream, it actually tells you how to solve the conflict. It actually has the pieces of the puzzle that you're not getting. And, you know, like I think when we were talking mm-hmm. before, people can spend hours telling me about the conflict that they're going through, and then as soon as they tell me their dream, that dream will just sum it up real quick, boom, 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 and it actually tells me what this person, you know, gives me the tools to hand this person in terms of, you know, making the resolution. So that's the three cycles that I see in all dreams.
Mm. So you're saying the dream, there's something wanting to be resolved through that inner psyche.
Right, right. It's like, you know, you were speaking before I came on about, you know, who knows what it is. I mean, I wouldn't be one to say who it is that's guiding us, what it is that's guiding us, but something is definitely guiding us. You know, some part of the psyche has an understanding of who we are supposed to become, how to get there, what needs to change, you know, and it's all about fulfillment, empowerment. You know, so I'm not sure. I would never be one to say definitively what it is, but it's, you know, I think anybody who has spent their life or dedicated their life to analyzing dreams will agree that how can a dreamer tell you something so that you can give them information back that they don't even know about themselves? What is it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what
mm-hmm.
would you say it is? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. What is what the,
you know,
what
the is
dream what
guiding us, you know?
Well, from my experience, mm-hmm. that I think there's different terms,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on people's beliefs, but that part of us that is all knowing, what do you call it? I call it sometimes the captain of the inner psyche, you know, mm-hmm. whether you want to say the higher self or mm-hmm. the part that's always connected to the oneness and actually knows what is unfolding, what is happening. It's, I think, a way to get the ego personality's attention
mm-hmm.
is coming through the symbolism of the dream.
Right, and that's why I call the dream is actually the Trojan horse, because, and let me just say for those people who don't know the story, the Greeks and the Trojans went to war over Helen, you know, that was ran off with Paris or whatever. But the Trojans held their defense with their big, their big fortress, and the Greeks were unable to penetrate. And so while the Trojans slept one night, they built a giant wooden horse. And when the Trojans woke up the next morning, they weren't sure what it was, and they allowed it to come through the gates. And then once it was inside of the gates, all the Greeks then, basically won the war. So I see. Go ahead.
Exactly. It's true. They came out of the horse and conquered everyone. Slaughtered, yes, not just conquered, right? Slaughtered because it was a surprise.
Right. And what you
so how did you meet the Trojan horse there then? So with the dream as the Trojan horse,
That's breaking what is through it the defenses. It's, whatever we might have decided, either from trying to conform to what we believe others expect of us, or influences of, what people have told us that we couldn't do or whatever, we might have become a shadow of who we're supposed to become. And it's really it sounds very simple, just be yourself. That sounds like a very simple statement. And dreams are ever trying to push us away from this false sense of who we are that has nothing to do with what's important to us and what drives us and our passion. In fact, I had an interesting dream submitted just within the last week. It was the shortest dream anyone had ever submitted. It was basically, normally they'll send a paragraph or a story or whatever, and this was just a ram's head with burning eyes. That's all the message said. And there's just so much information in there for that dreamer, that the ram's head, if it's a reflection of them, do they need to be more assertive? Are they being, kind of like banging heads, clashing with everything around them? What are the burning eyes? The burning eyes, the fire, the passion, And so, there's some part of us that is working ever to connect us to our passion. I think we're all like plants or flowers or whatever else that we see in the world around us. We have some inborn pattern of development that is constantly challenged by our need for conformity.
Let's touch on that too as well, because I think you can look, actually Jung talked about this also in the idea of that template of the soul, or we all come in with a living question, and you could look at it from a spiritual or metaphysical, or more of the view of spiritualism or metaphysics, that we come in with this certain encoding, a soul template, soul blueprint, divine blueprint. Again, so many ways to say it. Some people say we're all like snowflakes. We're all individually patterned from the same source. It does seem, you're right, this conformity, somewhere along the line people kind of go off because society or friends or family say this is better or more cool, or you're going to be more successful or easier. And so there can be a diverting away from this template, if you will. Do you feel that the dreams when they're coming through are a way of, in a sense, perhaps guiding people back?
Absolutely. That was what I was saying, is that there is some side of us that, A, has to have more of an omnipotent or omniscient sort of understanding of where we're supposed to go, that is constantly reminding us, in a sense, while we sleep in these symbols that, maybe that's not right for you, or maybe this isn't right for you. And what's cool is that our body's given this paralytic feature while we dream, so that it's obviously that there's some sense to the whole thing. And that in many ways we can test out the drama without having to do it in daily life. We're allowed to sort of, confront, our shadows and all those things that hold us back. And, one thing that anyone can agree on is that, REM, rapid eye movement, proves everyone dreams. And whether we remember them or not, they're changing us. It's just that when we choose to try to understand them, we're able to, fast forward our growth. We're able to get more in line with what it is we're trying to achieve. And most importantly, we have a sense of well-being and just, you know, and isn't there something cool about knowing that you have a guiding source within? That in itself is like empowering.
Very empowering. Very, and that's, I think, one thing I love working with dreams is that you begin, in a way it's an externalizing this guiding force and learning to read that map of that inner psyche or the map of that inner force.
Mm-hmm.
And also begins to make your life more magical, you know, when you kind of don't think that it's just your ego personality, you know, doing everything, you know, relying on that part of it. It's just like,
Which is why, you know, I think I said before in the last program, that's why I don't see any differences in culture. Like the people around the world, they're dreaming the same stuff. I see it in the age groups and the people in the 20-something who are entering the workforce that are having all the chase dreams, tons of chase dreams, you know, where they're forced to adopt a certain type of behavior before they've had that opportunity to integrate it. All of a sudden they're in the workforce, they're a supervisor, they have to reprimand someone. And then in the group of 40, you know, 30, 40 people, you see a lot of, I don't have my suitcase, I'm getting on a train, I don't have my purse, my clothes are dirty, they're wrinkled, you know, I'm supposed to go out. And you see a lot of the costume dreams where they're hitting that apex in life where, I've just dedicated 15 years to being this executive, and why am I so unhappy? You know, because it's a costume thing. You know what I'm saying? So it's back to, you know, that there is a, you know, that the dream is constantly helping us. And I think when I was a clothing buyer and, you know, I had a great, great career working on Rodeo Drive, traveling around the world, I had a dream that I was going somewhere and didn't have my makeup. And I had it so many times that I finally realized that I was putting a face on that wasn't mine, you know, that kind of stuff. So dreams can really help you get more in line with what is going to fulfill you.
But do you think people, obviously some people have more of a knack for tuning into the symbology. Do you think that it can be taught and that people can begin to get their own symbology or their own meaning? And if so, what helps do that?
Well, the first thing that it reminds me of is for all of us that had to learn poetry for the first time, I was lucky. I was kind of born with that, you know. But when you're sitting in the classroom and the teacher reads a poem and probably 90% of the class just, like, roll their eyes, what the heck was that, you know? But the teacher then breaks it down and says, okay, what this poet was, you know, they used this as a metaphor. They used the, you know, the idea of stone boat shoes, Annie Sexton or whatever, you know, to show the coldness. And so in the same way that anyone who goes after a degree has to go through some sort of literature or appreciation for the idea of metaphor, absolutely you can, you know, and that's what dreams are. They're metaphors. It's like everything is a reflection or captures so perfectly not only the idea but the feeling and the flavor and conjures up some change or some feeling within us that's a lot like when we watch a movie that we can't talk about but we know we were moved, you know. And so absolutely, and that was why the ABCs, you know, look at them as everything's a reflection of you. Before you do anything, write it all down, and then they're cryptic for a reason, and trust that, and that's where the ahas are. So just those simple things can help people to start remembering them. I wish more people did pay attention to their dreams.
yeah, I do too. I know I did it from a very young age, and also I agree what helps a lot is writing poetry, being connected to that part of you, even reading, you know, reading a lot, or fairy tales, or myth, or, you know, stories, just so your mind is fertile. And as you were, you know, speaking, Carrie, I was thinking that we don't, as much in the Western culture, haven't created the space to take the time to do that and develop that part of the mind to be able to, you know, interpret and reinterpret. Maybe that's what your iPhone app is also going to be doing, you know, in a sense.
Yeah, it's actually out, and it you know, it is something that people can, you know, use at their fingertips. But, you know, you just kind of hit a real pet peeve or actually something that I've also, you know, spent a lot of time in the schools with at-risk kids, you know, and that's, I feel like part of the overcrowding of prisons and drug abuse and all that stuff is really the result of our lack of respect for creativity and how important mm-hmm. it is, you know, to the learning process. And they'll, you know, without inspiration, all a kid has is peer pressure, right?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
some of these creative processes of teaching them what is inspiration or what's, you know, your life is a blank piece of paper. What are you going to make out of it? Without
yeah.
teaching the importance of art and education, yes, as a society, I think Hillary Clinton, you know, made a great statement about that as well, that it's art or, you know, the ability to believe in ourselves or be guided by our inspiration that lifts a child out of, you know, the bounds that, you know, their situation prescribed for them and allows them to transcend and become mm-hmm. the great. So it is a shame that we don't. And I guess in some sense, you know, the fact that we dream is proof that we are all creative. So even though we may not be getting it in school, we're still exercising. Our imagination is given free rein
mm-hmm.
while we're asleep.
Yeah, and I think if in the different forms, if people are taught or, you know, anybody in general, but, you know, I'm even thinking about people using the iPhone or apps, even though the median growing age is between, I think, 35 and 45. It's not so
At least it's not the Twitterers.
yeah. Oh, I love Twitter, though. The Twitterers
Twitter.
Are in the 45 to 50.
I know.
55.
Twitter's a different group. It's funny.
Yeah. And it's starting to grow faster now in the 18 to 34, but it, again, that you know, that teaching that, like you talked about, we just had a comment in the chat that I want to bring in from Amber, which I think really reflects this, she was saying that a lot of it is the idea that attention in some way is synonymous with love or being loved, so that people, you know, kids are going for attention.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, perhaps misinterpreting that. So maybe even, I mean, in a sense, I think knowing how to understand you or your inner you, and definitely through dreams, or, you know, what is my inner psyche saying, or what is this dream about? You know, what is my soul saying? Whatever, however you want to couch it, perhaps it is a very strong form of self-love.
Exactly. And Amber brings up a good point. And I think, when I was actually, I would get, the principal would choose kids that were at risk of joining gangs to come into my workshop that was called Creating Alternatives. And I was basically using art. And when they first walked in, they would be all long-faced and wouldn't talk to each other. And everybody, you know, mm-hmm. they were so, like you said, like Amber was saying, they're so concerned with conformity and acceptance. And they don't, in some ways, they don't want to draw attention or they, you know. And once we would Yeah, I would come up with these, like, objective, outside-of-the-line ways of saying, okay, just think of this, and let's write three lines. And before they knew it, they were expressing themselves. And that's where the profound, you know, that's once they started to express themselves and realize, hey, I'm not the only one afraid, I'm not the only one sad, I'm not the only one, you know, the metamorphosis was incredible, you know. So it's not, it definitely, you know, the dreaming process is creative, but when it's actually applied, you know, in that way, when we can share with each other our experiences without fear. And I, you know, I know a lot of artists that probably second guess themselves, you know, as they're trying to bring their vision forward or whatever. But anybody who is doing something with art learned long ago to put the self aside and just let the vision speak for itself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's well put. Ooh, I like that. That's really true. You do have to. You know. Someone, it just reminds me because you know, the other thing that I find too, I know, and we're talking dreams, but I also feel that we get these dream messages in waking state through symbolism or things that we see. And definitely, I have found working with dreams that you do start looking at your life differently. It becomes this, like I said, more magical, more mystical. Like you start seeing the messages everywhere, the symbolism everywhere. I don't know. Do you find that at all in your life?
Absolutely, because it's sort of two ideas. For me, it's like number one is the basis of Taoism, which is where you basically let go of the boundaries. What's going on in here and out there are all the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm having this experience just because, you know, I need it. You know, so it's going to teach me something. And another thing is Carl Jung's work or the way he describes synchronicity, which is also kind of profound. When, you know, whatever it is that's keying us in our dream state, with these symbols and archetypes and whatever that are trying to lead us towards some transformative process, that same energy is grabbing onto ideas during the day. So that's why you might dream of a fish and then see the same fish, you know, during the day, that synchronistic aspect, because the mind wants to be well. It wants to know. It wants to grow, you know. And when you do start the pain, and doesn't it make sense that you'd have to start paying attention to your dreams before you could ever appreciate synchronicity, that you can't have the connection without first, you know, starting to pay attention to what's going on inspirationally.
Interesting. Yeah, and that I like that. So it is that as above is so below, or within is without. So the land, there's a dissolving there of that boundary, and maybe that's why life becomes more magical. It's less dry.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Now, do you? Okay, so that's interesting. So, do you feel in a way if you are more aware in this way, and especially working with the dreams or the symbolism, do you find that you actually, or do you feel that you call the synchronicity in more, in a sense? Does that kind of help co-create it, or?
I think what it is it's more awareness. When awareness shifts because you start to recognize that you have some guiding inspiration, then you don't just say, okay, well, it's only coming to my dreams. I mean, in some ways, it's backwards. There's probably more of the population that believes that all experience is teaching us something, right? You know, it's like, but inner, outer, they're no different. So it's more like the shift in awareness makes us respect the moment and anything that's unfolding. In fact, I find that, and this is kind of something I don't talk about a lot because people don't get it, but dreams to me can be the ultimate teacher of, you know, when I say everything in the dream is a reflection of you, that includes other people. So everyone in our dream, they're really showing up in our dream to teach me something about myself. So in the same way, when we're going through daily life, somebody's having a bad day, they happen to be on our path, and they blast off at us, or, you know, whatever it is that's going on, it has some, I believe at least, it has some relevance to me, you know, if it's, it's teaching me something, and so I have to be patient, and rather than react, you know, what is it that, you know, the more they upset me, the more I'm holding on to something, maybe I don't need to hold on to, right?
Yeah. I think, too, at the beginning of the program, I was saying, you know, moving from that we to the me, you know, that it's not giving up our individual beingness or the realization that we're individuated aspects of all that is, but that we are all connected as well. And to me, what you just said is living that I'm looking around and saying, well, how is this reflecting me? Or am I doing this? Or is this, you know, to something I need to know. It's kind of opening your, it sounds like opening your vision more.
Exactly. It's like rather than needing a Trojan horse to break through the fortress, you just disassemble it all together. You know, you just let it all be. You let it all be relevant. You let it all be what it is.
Now, we did have one question also. Michael was saying flying dreams. What do you have any ideas of the symbolism of that?
Mm-hmm. Generally, I break down the transportation symbols. So I don't know if he means like flying in an airplane or just waking or recognizing at some level that, wow, I'm dreaming and
flying,
now I fly.
Just flying in general, you know, where you're actually flying, perhaps flying through the air.
Well,
I don't know, Michael in the chat, if you can give more clarity in that, but that's what I was getting, flying.
You're right. They're both, because they deal with going up. They both have a lot to do with aspirations. In some ways, the ability to fly is a recognition. It's kind of like a reflection of, wow, I've achieved that power within myself to you know, be able to reach, you know, do you understand what I'm saying? The sky is kind of our dreams and our goals and our aspirations. Sometimes there's a part of lucid dreaming where people wake up, you know, or not wake up or whatever state you're in, and then you just go, wow, I want to do something really cool, so I fly. That might be a little bit different, but generally anything that involves airplanes or flying, even attics in some ways, you know, things that are up are generally a reflection of where it is we're trying to go. But I bet you, Michael, when he had the flying dream, it corresponded to that rush that that might have taken place because something he had been working hard to try to achieve finally bore fruit.
You know, oh, good. Now he clarified. Thank you, Michael. Not flying, being able to fly, like flying like a bird. Yeah, and I had a lot of those now, but especially when I was younger. As a child, had a lot of those. Any thought of that where you're able to fly or flying up?
Right. Like I said, it's empowerment. It's a symbol of, you know, whatever part of the mind would have held us back, the negativity, the, you know, whatever's put, it's no longer holding us down, and we can achieve our dreams. That's how I would interpret it.
I like that. Yeah, I am. And then some say it can be a memory of a time we could fly or another dimension of flying. I suppose there's that aspect, which also brings us to what do you think of prophetic dreams? I know that's a small portion of dream interpretation or dream analysis, dream therapy. I have had some prophetic dreams. Some very perhaps with lofty, some very transpersonal, and some just very personal where I saw years ago, I had a whole dream of this guy cheating on me and who he cheated with. I was traveling and the whole thing happened. Even me going to the location where he was staying and knocking on the door and hearing a girl's voice going, laughing. I mean, the whole thing I had 3 days before. And my friends thought I was nuts because we were traveling, and I said, I'm telling you, you know, this is what I saw, and I know this is what's going on. And sure enough, it all played out.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's not really such, you know, when I was talking before, the third cycle of the dream, and I write a lot about that in that book, The Mythology of Sleep, the third cycle of the dream, not only is that bizarre symbolism, but a lot of times that's the part that is prophetic. Like, you know, and I see it commonly, so it doesn't surprise me. Like in the symbolism, when you break it down, I think one example I used in that book was somebody talked about their boat had sunk and Sears was going to fix it in 3.5 months or whatever, and in 3.5 months, actually, the situation was resolved. And you know, so it doesn't surprise me, especially since you're very cognizant of your dreams and, you know, work with them, that you would have prophetic dreams. I think they're very common.
Okay. Yeah, this one, I think I was like 17. I'd been traveling. We met somebody, and so it was somebody I was kind of lightly, you know, at such a young age, so it was, you know, a little crush. But I thought that it was interesting. The dream had all these hallways, and then the door to the apartment, and that's all that I saw in my dream. And then later, 3 days later, which is kind of weird, that was 3 days, you know, I was in the same hallway that I had been in my dream. I was walking to with my friend to go visit and knocked on the door and heard. And totally freaked one of my friends out. She's like, oh, my God, just like your dream. I said, yeah, I tried to tell you what was going to happen. So for me, it took the sting out of even what happened with the stupid little crush relationship because it was such a confirmation with the dream. Yeah. I was more excited about
that
dream.
And that really has more to do with what we were talking about before, that there is no real separation between in here and out there. And, you know, some side of you was preparing you for, you know what I mean? It's all one big circle, you know. And
so do you feel, Carrie, that part perhaps that is giving us, this is an interesting point, I never thought about it this way, that part that's perhaps giving us that dream symbolism or dream message, whatever the situation is either already knows or is preparing us for that next step, in a sense?
And that's the piece I was talking about before, that it's hard to say what that is. I mean, absolutely, without a doubt, some side of us, something has a different sense of time because it's already there, or it already knows where we're supposed to
it's
go.
It's already, like, happened.
Exactly. It's like a
in
mission.
A way.
Exactly. But what it is, and, you know, whether it's the higher self or God, or I don't know what you want, what it would be.
Psychic part of us.
But the only thing I will say definitively is, yes, something does know more than we know, you know, because that's what's guiding us.
Cool. Yeah.
Really, it's, I think
that's
it's
very
a
cool.
gift. It's a gift that we have.
Yeah. Well, I wonder how to perhaps, in a sense, wake people up more to this aspect of integrating this part. And it's interesting because, again, Amber's putting the chat, ego is necessary to survive. Yeah, we need that boundary or that form. You know, you don't want to live in, but living in either place, you know, you're in the cuckoo house if you're living in the all the time in the, you know, or becoming the archetype or the myth or the dream. If you're in that, you know, you don't survive so well. But also, if you're stuck in the mundane ego only focus, you don't do so well.
Well, it's kind of interesting times, though, isn't it? You know, in terms of as a group of people, I think we're shifting away from that, from our fortress. You know, watching Obama's reactions or what, you know, all the things that are going on, you know, as a group, we are getting away from living a very ego-driven, fearful, fear-based, you know, so I would think it's only a matter of time before individually, you know, it's not, and it's funny because maybe 10 years ago, the things I talk about today, I would have gotten more flack, you know, actually today.
Oh, yeah.
People, I don't think I've ever discussed dreams with anyone, even, no matter what they do all day long, that doesn't go, aha, yeah, you know what I mean? So we've come a long way.
It's almost like, well, it is learning this inner language and teaching people, you know, in other words, how to get their own inner direction or follow their true path. By what are those inner promptings or those symbols that are coming through for you, in a sense?
Exactly that. You know, it's just once people start to, you know, and again, it's back to how you approach them. Whenever I work with somebody, a lot of times they'll tell me, "Well, I don't dream." Most people don't, or they don't believe they dream, and they just.
That's what I'm wondering. What do you say to that?
I trust the process. Immediately, they start remembering their dreams, and then once we start using the dream as our template of where we're going, then they start to get that. Wow! I mean, they'll write me years later and tell me how they are so glad they know how to interpret their dream and how they were able to really. You know, just achieve so much more that they didn't even think was possible or feel so good about, you know, where they are or whatever. So they may have started out thinking, I don't dream or I don't remember my dreams. Then once they recognize that something does have this guiding source, then they respect it. And then because they respect it, it's like a catch-22, because they respect it, they start to remember more. And then they remember more, they learn more. it just kind of goes with that. And again, I think a lot of people get lost in trying to remember all of it, and they don't have to. They can, you know, just that one piece of it.
That one bit. So I just want to let people know that if you have any questions, you can continue to type in the chat in caps, or you can call in at 347-539-5122. And, of course, we're speaking with dream therapist and interpreter, and teacher as well, Carrie Honey. Carrie, also at this time, if you can go through perhaps the main archetypes of the dreamscape and touch a little bit on that for our listeners.
Well, there's definitely, yes, in terms of like symbols. When I think of archetypes, I think of a transformative journey, like you might hear of like the warrior or the survivor. So the dream can be speaking about a transformative journey, you know, like, for example, what Jung would call the unknown child. So when somebody dreams about having an all of a sudden being with this unknown child and going somewhere, I see that as the birth of some side of them that they're not aware of, and they're so it's kind of guiding them in the dream. So that would be like one archetype. Another one is, and I see them play out at different pieces too, because when I first start working with somebody, they may have a lot of very conflicted dreams, chase dreams, choppy water dreams, landslides, whatever. And then at some point, maybe somebody dies. You know, in the death, somebody dying in a dream is just a dying away of some part of us. And it's after that that they usually start accompanying this unknown child. And then towards the end, it's what would be called like the higher, or the what do they call it, the mother, the great mother, the great man. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, there's somebody in our dream. We're having a sense that the water's rising up, and or this person appears, and they're giving us this insightful information. And so there's archetypes like that, and then there's also just the common symbols that I break down in transportation symbols, the house, you know, the piece that the house plays. When you look at transportation symbols, there's the car, the train, the boat. Let's just use those. The car represents kind of how we're driving our life. We're very much steering and putting on the brakes and very much in control. When we board a train, in fact, I had a lady from India submit a dream for her 8-year-old child that everybody was getting on the train and he never could make it and was left behind, and he had it over and over. And the train dream brings the ideas that the tracks have been laid out before us. We can't really deviate. That's expectations, isn't it? So, you know, so I could heard him, maybe talk to him about who's putting these expectations on you and why are you not achieving them, or, you know, kind of getting at the root of that. Where the boat is, because it's traveling over water, it has more to do with emotions, the unknown, the currents, you know, things that come up from the deep, you know. So you kind of, in transportation symbols are very much a main theme in people's dreams, as are houses. And I don't know if you want me to break that down.
Yeah, I love the idea with the house, with different parts of the psyche, right?
Right. It's like the if something's taking place in the basement, it's kind of the subconscious, it's below the surface. If something's taking place upstairs, it's kind of like the what Freud would have called the superego, or, you know, the conscience, or it could have to do with aspirations. The main floor where we greet people, people that dream of the kitchen, has a lot to do with nourishment from a broader sense. If something's taking place in the front yard versus the backyard, the front yard is what we're doing to make the, you know, back to conformity, to impress, or as Amber was saying, get attention, or things that are going on in the front yard have more to do with that, where the things that are going on in the backyard is more of our space. And some of the, like the shadow you were talking about in the beginning of your program, you know, made me think of the intruder dreams. Dreams are kind of interesting. They're interesting in that generally we'll have a dream of something and then we think that it's warning us. Like if we have an intruder dream, we might wake up and go, wow, I have to be careful, I have to lock my doors. If we look at the intruder as a reflection of us, it's saying just the opposite. What are we doing that when people come into our life, we feel like they're intruding? Does that make sense? So a lot of times when I hear of somebody dreaming of the person in the shadow stalking the house, trying to break in, it's a major red flag that, wow, there's a side of you that you will not own, and it generally comes from being the black sheep, being misunderstood. It's you that's stalking your own house.
Trying to get in, so it's saying that you need to integrate that. Interesting. So we have integrating that part.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, that it's just understanding, you know, the house from the standpoint of that's me, that's what's coming in, what's going out, what's happening upstairs in the bedroom. If we're dreaming of the bedroom, you know, that in itself is saying something about our sexuality, because we're dreaming of what we're not doing or facing, you know.
And Michael's asking in the chat, Carrie, what about black and white dreams with no color?
Well, that to me, if you know, the interesting part about a person submitting a dream to me is the language they use to describe the dream, the typos, the Freudian slips or whatever that come with the dream are as important as the dream content. So I don't know, you know, people dream in color, they dream in all kinds of stuff, but to describe a dream as being black and white, I'd go back to the dream and consider it from that standpoint. What do the words black and white mean? You know, this is some contrast or some clarity. It couldn't be more simple, black and white, you know, that kind of thing. So whatever the other symbols that were taking place in that, you know, need to be considered from that canvas. Does that make sense? Because
absolutely.
The lighting, when we do things in the dark in a dream, that's a reflection of not really being cognizant of something where all of a sudden it turns into the light. So every piece that somebody would want to describe about their dream is, you know, it can be, you know, I've seen people do typos, you know, where they didn't mean to say that word, I know it, because they're sending it to me in writing, but that type spoke volume about.
That's right, the type, yeah, exactly, exactly. You know, I know that, and it's interesting you say that, because the people are sending in the dreams, and in a sense, there's an intuitive element of what that means, because you're looking at the language. You're maybe looking at how it's written. There's
again,
an energy coming.
Right, because I don't separate what's going on inside of them from what's going on outside, or they're wanting to share it, you know. They may, you know, some side of them does know that, you know, and that's back to Freudian slips. I mean, Freudian slips is something within the psyche is desperately trying to be heard.
I know something that helps me a lot when I'm interpreting is I'll ask myself, especially if it's something that I'm like, oh, you know, like it's either scary or, you know, shocking or something, I'll say, you know, how am I not doing this, or how am I doing this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it seems to be something done to me, or do I need to integrate this? Because I think sometimes that which seems very shocking or maybe out of character, sometimes you kind of want to push or say, what is that? And then it's like, whoa, am I doing this or not? Do I need to do this? A lot of times I find it's something you need to do. Just like you said, like the shadow outside, you know, lurking.
And
instead of keeping it out.
Right. And when somebody tells me their dream, and as soon as I say, well, how is that a reflection of you? It's like they look at me cross-eyed. Like, what? How is that symbol a reflection of you? It's that symbol.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can just remember that one thing from this whole talk today, it can just change everything for, you know, how you understand your dreams.
Yeah. Now, Light is putting in the chat, why do some dreams stay with us and others fade as soon as we are awake?
You know, that's an interesting question, you know, because I tend to see that the louder the dream, the more the transformation is trying to get underway. It doesn't mean to say that we're not transforming every night. It's just that it doesn't require our what we're referring to as ego or consciousness, the fortress or whatever. It doesn't require our participation. When the uglier, the bloodier, the scarier the dream, the more the information is trying to stay with us. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, the dream won't stay with us because it's achieved whatever it was meant to. And I would use as an example, why can we go to sleep some nights so angry we just cannot believe that, you know, whatever. We wake up the next day and it's completely different. It's not important.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's an aspect of time, but certainly something has occurred.
So are you saying that sometimes the dream is working it out, so
that's
we may not
definitely.
Even have conscious
well,
understanding?
If you were to like get out a microscope and look at your skin and look at each little cell as it's regenerating itself, if we were to cut ourselves and watch the wound, you know, heal itself magically in time lapse, you know, why would we think that stops at the shoulders? Our head is the most important survival organism. Wouldn't its ideas need to be regenerated if, you know, like all this, you know, what we're talking about, ego and conformity, it's not necessarily good for us. So, yeah, I think every night there is this healing process. a regenerative process, a purging, you know. And then there are times that we have to, that we're called to be more involved in the transformation, and that's when the dreams start to get kooky and, you know, scary. You know, the louder and the more it stays with us, the more we'll research it. You know, and that would be what I'd ask of everyone that's listening is, you know, when you have a the next time that you do remember, just take one piece of that dream, cherish it, go and get on the internet, Google it, Google the word, you know, and just say, what is this word? What does it mean to me? Well, how can it teach me? How can it guide me? Let that be your grail for the day, and see if I'm not right.
And Tammy is saying that sometimes the dreams are a way to resolve issues. So is it happening, it's happening in the dream time? It gets worked out in the dream time?
Yeah, that's what I was saying before, is we got this paralytic feature that allows us to have experiences that don't necessarily have to take place, you know, that would harm us, you know. But yeah, there's definitely an issue that, you know, whether we're remembering or not, we could have gone through something in our day and chalked it up to the same old thing, and then when we go to sleep, we dream about it, and because it was something we encountered, we dismiss it, and yet there's some element that's different, and that element that's different is the wake-up call, so that we don't have the same experience. But whether or not we remember it, you know, I think of the mind as having two sides to itself, you know. There's the waking head and then the sleeping head, and the sleeping head is doing its work. And the sleeping head is then, you know, seeping into waking head, and somehow we find, you know, a balance.
So it's, yeah, it is really about balance, what you're saying. It's, as you're talking, I'm thinking about that. It's, you know, that inner, outer, it's, and also that what you're saying is that it doesn't always have to be, sometimes it needs to be integrated consciously or in the waking, you know, waking state, so to speak, but it may just be done for us, you know, internally, or we're doing it to ourselves on a different plane.
Yeah, sometimes we need to go out and get a doctor and get stitches, and sometimes our body just can heal itself. Doesn't require anything.
Now, this was an interesting comment or in the chat from Grand Elf of having a lot of dreams. Is he saying they're technical dreams, or he's doing things technically in buildings with a lot of people? I don't know if it's tech or, but technical kind of.
Well, the buildings, when you're having, like, the difference between a building and a house generally has to do with work issues. If another thing about buildings is a lot of times they're rickety structures, or they're half built, or they've got stairs going out into space, or, you know, and that's just how the future is, and that's kind of how we look at our careers. We don't want to know where the ceiling is. We want to keep going out into space. So if he's to say, I'm not sure what he means by technically, but
doing technical stuff. Well, what if you are like in a big office building or something, and you're doing maybe computer stuff or technical?
You know, I would say if he needs to look at the building as a reflection of him and where he stands in relation to his work. He needs to look at if he's being technical. Is that a good thing? You know.
He said those are modern solid structures. They're modern solid structures that he's in.
Right. And so is there some sense of this building being a reflection of him, that he's trying to be modern and solid and technical, as being, you know, whatever it is, this building, just like the house, is a reflection of him and his relationship to work. So he kind of has to look at the details of what's going on with the building.
And also seems like the future... that's interesting. I'm wondering, too, can it sometimes be, are we learning something, or maybe a piece of what we're going to be integrating later, or like a place of learning? Can we be tapping into that in our dreams?
No, that's funny, because I know I'm not the only one that happens to it, and I really haven't had it in years, but there's been periods that I remember, and other people have told me as well, that they have a sense of going into a classroom or learning something. I remember one time dreaming that I was reading these words, and when I woke up, I wrote the words down and I looked them up, and they were a type of Latin that was spoken in 10th century Spain. Where did I come up with that? And then at some point, you know, I ended up doing a lot of writing around the Muslim religion and or Islam and how important it was during the Dark Ages, mm-hmm. taking place in 10th century Spain. So I'd be the first to say, yeah, there's something yeah. beyond just the, you know, there's lots of, it's always learning it. What, it's not always a personal thing.
Mm-hmm. So you could be in that state either tapping into the collective unconscious, or if we're going to go again from the spiritualism or esoteric realm, the Akashic,
mm-hmm.
Or other planes of existence, or people even say a future self or what is going to be needing to be relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever find perhaps people are being prepared, let's say like in that case of in the classroom being prepared, for something you know, that's coming up?
You know, I think that everybody's different and everybody's at different stages in their lives, and they go up mm-hmm. and they go down, and their dreams and what they're doing is often a reflection of where they are in their growth. So sometimes, you know, you can be as cool as anything at 21 and know it all, and then by 25 be really stupid and on your feet eating rocks again, right? You know, you're like your whole
mm-hmm.
life, it's this spiral. It's not necessarily always going up, but so little bits and pieces of the life journey, there might be times where we are open, you know, and moving and growing, and so maybe our dreams are filled with more inspiration if we're artists, or you know, maybe this was a grand elf, you know, vision of what he's seen is maybe an inspirational picture of something he's supposed to build or is building, or you know, only he knows if what he's seen was good and bad, good or bad. You know, what was it?
Mm-hmm.
What was the whole message of the dream? But yeah, dream. Whatever happens when the fortress gates are open, when the gatekeeper goes to sleep, whatever it is that takes place in the psyche, it's gonna be a reflection of where we are in our growth at any given time, which can always change.
Hmm. I like it. So in a sense, also, are you? The growth is kind of cyclical or circular. Can we, let's say, like if I'm hearing you correctly, like at a certain time seem like we're really growing or evolving, and then maybe a part is missed, and years later that part is maybe brought to our attention?
Right, exactly.
Revisited.
Like, it would be, you know, the example of the let's just use an example. Let's say that a young girl has a parent that something drives the other caregiver away, and mm-hmm. she ends up being the mother to all the rest of the children. So she resents the mother, and the mother in return resents her. So yeah, from
right.
a very early age, this child then feels like a black sheep. And yet she knows how to pull herself up by her bootstraps, goes out into the world, puts herself through college, gets herself a nice career, has all the dreams that, you know, coincide with all the growth and stuff, and yet she can be 45 years old and still have the stalker. Does that make sense? You know, so,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, there would be
which
something.
The stalker is going to be like the scapegoat that needs to be, or a black sheep that needs to
right.
be integrated, is what
right.
you're saying.
Like, yeah, I mean, my coaching to someone like that is, okay, you kind of need to go back to that place where you started to resent your mother, and just, you know, it's almost like the idea that forgiveness isn't something that we do out of, we don't give anything away when we forgive. We get something for ourselves. We let go of something. Mm-hmm. And to say that, you know, people are people, whether they're our parents or not. They didn't come with instructions, and a lot of times, you know,
mm-hmm.
life is what it is, and you're holding resentment for your mother, you know, and all that is what the stalker is, you know, full of all that energy of, you can say you don't like her, but somehow you've then owned her reflection of you as being the black sheep, the difficult one, the one we have to tiptoe around because you get so mad, or, you know, and just if you go back to that place where the black sheep was created, forgive the parent, whatever it takes, you know, you stop having the stalking dreams.
Hmm. It's interesting, and this morning I did my my meditation book, Meditation for Everyday Living, I've got this forgiveness meditation, because I kept hearing, you're like the fourth person or fifth person within the week, and and with it, and on Awakening, it's been talking about forgiveness, so I thought, you know what, I'm going to do did last night and then this morning, and there seems to be up for a lot of people right now, Carrie, this idea of, it may be because there's a lot of shadow material up, forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think forgiveness is the gravitational energy of the shadow, or how can I put it? I mean, it doesn't make sense, but, you know, what's pulling the shadow to us and making the experiences that we're having difficult is the opposite of forgiveness. So it's the anger that we're holding on to. It's what's deep inside that won't be resolved, and so we have to have the experience over and over and over. And it's generally a bad experience because it's meant to break us open so that we can release it. So forgiveness is the medicine for the shadow, mm-hmm. I guess how I would describe it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again,
to release that.
Yeah, and I always come back, you know, most people think that, okay, I'm going to forgive you. Like, okay, I'm going to give you $20. You know,
mm-hmm.
And it isn't
mm-hmm.
about that. Forgiveness is like a stone on your ankle, you know. It's a shackle that's holding you back because you can't forgive. You know all that stuff. I don't have to tell you.
Yeah, but it's good. To, no, I think it's good to hear reminders for myself and also everyone listening that it holds you back. And sometimes I find it's not always forgiving others. It may be what we feel we've done to someone, or they've done to us, or what we feel we've done to ourselves.
Yeah, and forgiving ourselves, which is
yeah.
You know, that's huge. And that's kind of interesting, too, just to sort of come back to the dream standpoint. You know, people, you if you listen to someone else tell you their dream, you immediately see, you know them, and you're objective, and you can see what the dream is saying. But when you stop and try to analyze your own dream, you can't see it. You know, it just, you know, reflection is not something that's easy. So forgiveness is like a huge part of, you know, it's like, if we can't even really understand ourselves or see ourselves objectively or whatever, you know, forgiveness is not an easy thing to accomplish. And it's certainly forgiving ourselves because, you know, that's a very dynamic and complex subject.
Well, and I think, I'm not sure your thoughts on this, I'd love to know, is that it seems that it's also something that it happens in cycles. It doesn't just... You know, it's an ongoing. I think you have to tune in every now and then and see what's coming up, or if you hear something, or your ears perk a little bit more, you know, when someone says something, is it, you know, is there something, like you said, you're holding on to?
I call it charge, you know.
Yeah, emotional charge.
Yeah, when we go through life, if we're like, ha, 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 belly laughs and, you know, big hugs and, you know, stopping to help somebody pick up their change in the line, or, you know, just... If we're going through life without any charge and just kind of rolling along, you know, then, you know, there's a sort of lightness of being. But when we're in a situation where there's a response and a charge and, you know, it's like that's the first clue that there's something mm-hmm. there that you haven't processed yet. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's the charge that becomes revealing. You know, of what part of, you know, how we've shackled ourselves and why we have to keep having the same experience. Because people that are highly charged are highly charged. Every situation that they have is, you know, they're victims and somebody's always out to get them. And so the charge in itself is a big red flag.
Boy, I wish more people would tune into that. That it's once you learn it and do it, it's such a, makes your life and everybody else around you much, you know, lighter, more in a flow state. If people would take accountability to tap into, know, am I?
I remember, like, I used to read
charged.
I don't know if you ever read Ram Dass from a long time ago.
Yes.
I know he's still around, but I read him when I was really young. But I remember it's always, hello, myself, or, you know, it's like, if you just go through the world, hello, myself, what are you going to
do?
Yeah, yeah. It's like that, you know, I don't know, you don't have to go around philosophically preaching to everybody that we're all connected, but in your own way, if you can believe that everyone on your path is there for a reason, and we, you know, forget all the good encounters, but the bad ones stay with us, you know.
That's right. Yeah, if people would see what is that reflection, you know, that projection, but also to perceive, not, I find some people insert themselves in situations where they don't need to. If they just stayed in the perception mode, and just perceiving what's going on and not insert, then they wouldn't enact this whole drama. But of course, if you have emotional charge, you can't perceive, you know,
it's
and you take things personally and insert yourself, you know.
It's why you can see like two little children and they can watch an event and the one can be completely like, you know, bounced around like a bobber in the top of, you know, turbulent seas, where the other one can just go, wow, that person is behaving that way because they're in a lot of pain. Maybe I should give them a hug. Where one person is going to want to run and yell at the person for being bad, or and the other one is like, wow, you must really be hurting today. Let me, you know, kids are so cool that way that they, you know, you can just see it's they're so innocent.
Of course, it's more difficult to do that when you're charged.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And then tell a charged person that they're charged and want to see
that's
some
right,
fun.
That's right.
Ooh, that one doesn't go over real big.
That's right. Oh, God. Yeah, he's putting in the chat, when emotion takes over, logic goes out the window. Yeah,
exactly.
It definitely.
Exactly. Perspective, too, gone.
Yeah, it's out. Now, Carrie, what would you say for, and again, let's see, those that are just tuning in, we are speaking with Carrie Honey on dreams and how to harness that, the meaning of the dream to help you transform your life and actualize. The website is wayofthedreams.com.
Let me just correct that. It's a way
it's
of dreams. So just
way of dreams.
Right.
Okay, way of dreams.
.com.
Right. wayofdreams.com. What would you say a good beginning place for people, let's say, that are now listening and saying, maybe I should integrate this in my life. Maybe this is something that's going to help me make the changes I need to do or even just understand myself better.
Well, definitely they need to make a conscious decision before they go to sleep that they want to start remembering their dreams. And then when they wake up, are you asking how to help them remember their dreams? Is that your question? Because I mean,
let's say people listening, you know, what is a good, I guess, first step or first couple of steps?
Well, definitely is like to you know, look at in the same way that all of life is teaching us something, all of our experiences are relevant to our journey. You know, it's that sort of sense of patience and respect for what's unfolding, whether it's in our dream life or in our experiences. You know, just start there. You know, stop. Don't go into the future. Don't project a lot of your, you know, junk on everybody. Just stop and start to be more observant. So that would be, to me, like the first thing is like react less. I think there's a bumper sticker, you know, bark less and wag more. Or, you know, just don't be responsive, just be observant, you know, and just kind of interesting and just watch life and see what life can teach you, you know, about yourself. And then in the same way, you know, you go back to your dreams and dreams are doing the same thing. Everything's kind of teaching me something and, you know, just remember one piece of it and then take that back into life and look and see what life can tell you about that symbol and look for the synchronicities, you know. And I think it's
now,
really,
Go ahead. How would one look for the synchronicities? We talk about this a lot, but how is it from the dream to the waking state, or how would you term that?
Well, I think if we see it in the waking state and then dream it, we wouldn't call it synchronicity because we'd say I'm dreaming about it because I just saw it today, right? So synchronicity is really when something happens in the dream state, or, you know, that we're inspired with something that doesn't exist, which is kind of what happens when we're dreaming. And then we go in and we see that it does exist. that's kind of the essence of synchronicity. And to me, synchronicity is a confirmation, because it's confirming something that only we can believe in, you know. So
that we could only know, and we could only know the meaning of.
Right, exactly. And I'd say, you know, people often ask me about deja vu. You know, and it's kind of like, you know, I think deja vu has got shades of synchronicity in it for sure, because when you're having it, how is it possible that you are remembering. And it's back to what you were saying with your prophetic dreams. I don't think people realize how much of their dreams, you know, are prophetic in that way. And I don't know, you know, they describe deja vu as something that's going on in consciousness where you're standing in the moment and it's kind of hiccuping so that it seems like you're perceiving, but it's really happening in memory and it's playing out, or I don't, however they describe it, it's still profound. And,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
It's again coming from the idea that whatever, there isn't really a boundary. I mean, there's no boundaries to our connections to other people. Obviously, we have to take care of others if we want the world to be a better place, and you know, there's just some basic logical truths. I think what you know, I don't want to get into politics, but it's quite interesting to me that, you know, during the New Deal and all that, where we put Social Security into place, which is so, it took a lot of seniors out of poverty, you know, and they didn't put health care in place, and now why anybody would even have not want that to happen, you know, it's like so similar to me. You know,
It is.
I mean, we have
why
to
wouldn't
take
someone
care of everyone. We, you know, everyone. It's not like it's right or wrong or morally correct or whatever, but we just can't build a barbed wire society to keep the people who don't have from stealing from us. You know, it's just not going to work. We have to. You know, we're only going to be better if everyone is better too.
Yeah, so, comes with consciousness.
Right.
Now, one question I had in the chat, Debbie was asking, and we've just got a remaining minutes to touch on, that's snakes, dreaming of snakes.
Snakes are kind of interesting because they're part of the reptile family. And I like to, you know, like the difference between a mammalian creature, like anything that would, like a bear or an elephant or whatever, and the reptilian creatures have to do with the mammalian ones are more having to do with emotion, things that were taught by the mother, that sort of parenting and caring and insecurity and fear and stuff like that, where when we look at the reptiles, they're the older part of the brain. The reptiles often have to do with things we can't control. I mean, sexual feelings, the fight or flight response. So anytime that we're dreaming of reptiles, something very, what's the word, old is rising, and snakes, as you know, related to other reptiles, they can be phallic, obviously. I think that would have been the only way that Freud would have described it. So they can have that sort of sexual thing to it. But a lot of times,
and also transformative, right?
It's transformative, exactly, because they shed their skin. And then the other one is that you have, if you're dreaming of a snake, you have to stop and go, okay, if the snake is a reflection of me, is there something I'm doing? Because snakes also wind around things and strangle them of life, right? That's kind of their, you know, something they do. So you have to take that symbol, the snake, and say, Is it because I'm going through some major transformation right now that I'm dreaming of snakes? Am I not acknowledging my sexuality? Is that why I'm dreaming of the snake? Or am I strangling some side of myself that really wants to live, you know? You know, so you, only you can know what that snake means. But it's definitely a very vital symbol, you know, something that is speaking to kind of fear and fight or flight and stuff that would be related to the autonomic nervous system.
Well, it's all that transformative energy. It's just kind of, I guess, how you use it. And again, what I'm hearing from you, Carrie, it's about that balance. And maybe that's part of what the dream is calling in, is what's the balance here? You know, or how are you using this energy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the snake is a huge archetype of healing that has existed since, you know, way before any of our patriarchal religions. And I think it was the power of the snake that actually led to it being persecuted and relegated to some evil, because even Moses had a cult in Negadishusha, or I can't even pronounce it, but it was a very old cult, and it was all about rebirth. It was back when we celebrated the rebirth of the sun every year, you know, at the winter solstice, and And because when these new religions arrived, they castigated the snake because it held such power. But it is definitely a healing, transformative symbol.
Mm. Yes, it is. And again, what I'm hearing from all of this is really for people to begin to delve into their own symbolism, to read that, to interpret that, to help them, and again, go back to that, to transform their lives or bring that integration that's needed.
Right, and that's what I try to do in my dream dictionary that I have on the iPhone and also the book, but I try to show, you know, I give the ancient, it's not like the cookie cutter sort of interpretations that go
mm-hmm.
back to, you know, oh, if you dream of this, it means that's going to happen. I it's steeped in the ancient symbolism and what it means, and then you take it back into your own life and see how that's relevant to what you're doing.
Very powerful, Carrie. We have been speaking with Carrie Honey. You can reach her at wayofdreams.com to tap into that inner life and get the symbolism to help to transform your life. Thank you so much, Carrie, for being with us on Awakenings today.
Thank you, Michelle. It's so nice to talk with you again.
Yeah, definitely. Open door policy. Love to have you back. I love this. Just building upon, build more meaning and more insight. So thank you so much for.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Take good care.
You too.
And listeners, you take good care. I think we've got some great insight here and great information about the dreamscape and how that we can tap into this part of our own self to get that next step or next message for our transformation, transition, and growth. Again, we were speaking with Carrie Honey, and she can be reached at wayofdreams.com. And those of you lovely, lovely, radiant light being listeners, participants, you can reach me at awakeningsradio.com. Love to hear from you. Also, if you'd love to be on the newsletter included in the Self and Light Conscious Living and Awakenings Radio happenings, the email again, awakeningsradio@gmail.com. And if you have guest ideas, get suggestions, or PR people, if you're listening and you want certain of your clients on the contact information for that, is awakeningsradioguests@gmail.com. And as always, connect on Facebook on Awakenings Radio. I love your comments, your feedback, your emails, and I love the uploads of the videos that many have been doing. I think Vina Blue uploaded a wonderful vid of laughter yoga. So until next time, always continue to share your insight, shine your light, and keep awake.